Okay. Parshas Vayeshev, there's a piece over here in the Sefer that we hadn't done before. It's on page 226, a Rashbam. We had put into the Sefer. It hadn't been on the sheets, actually. That's why we didn't do it last time. But it's very important. It's not Nogea really pshat in this Parsha, but it's a very famous Rashbam, and it's worth saying it over. It's a very, very famous Rashbam. First, a little bit of Akadama. There are different halakim in Torah, and we have the klal that the ayin panim of Torah, there's mem chesha, there's mem tes panim, like this way, and mem tes panim this way. There are many different facets, and they can all coexist. They also do not have to exist in any given parasha, except for pshat. Pshat has to exist, and the Gemara says ein mikra tzadei pshuto. Now, what is pshat is tricky. Let's explain something. If I say that somebody has a chip on his shoulder, is the pshat that he has a piece of wood on his shoulder and he's and it's a muscle for something? Or that word means the person is angry about something, upset about something. Well, the right way to, if you were translating he has a chip on his shoulder into Hebrew, you wouldn't translate Yesh lo chatichat etz ala katef shelo. That would be wrong. The right translation would be atzbanil mashu or something like that. So sometimes the literal translation is not pshat. If a person makes a comment very sarcastically, the comment is not literal. So the pashtus is the first meaning, or the better way to say is the primary meaning. Many times it is the literal meaning. Many times it is not that. Now, when it can't mean the literal meaning, for instance, let's go back to the chip on the shoulder. If the person's shoulders happen to be very, very clean and there's nothing on it, then obviously the chip on the shoulder is going to be only a metaphor, and that's simple, that the simple explanation, if the statement he has a chip on his shoulder is correct, then that's what it means. But let's say something is, I say something that is true as it is. I say, I woke up to a gray and dark morning, where it literally was gray and dark. It was kind of fall and the winter, and it was kind of very gray and dark. So the literal translation is true. I'm not writing a book about the weather. I'm writing about myself and my mood and events that happened. So how do I explain, is the primary meaning the literal meaning, or is the primary meaning the content? You can go either way. You can take it either way. Sometimes it's more obvious, sometimes less obvious, and there's a room for real machlokas. When we learn Torah, we have a klal of Eimek Ezei Pshuto. I have to teach my kid Chumash Pshat. And then Drush and Remez and Soit and Soit and everything else. Same thing with myself. I learn Chumash, I'm supposed to learn Pshat first, and then everything else. Well, sometimes I have a hard time, what is Pshat? So we have the early Rishonim took different approaches to it. The Targum is Masoros way back. And we assume usually the Targum of the Pshut Shel Mikra, even though occasionally Rashi will veer from it, which is interesting. And that's why Targum is called a Tirgum. It's a translation. We don't know much about. We guess what the Targum tries to do, but we don't have any clear answers what the Targum is trying to do. So when he veers from the literal meaning, the different approaches to it. We have a sefer like Devin Ezra, who is, his understanding of Pshat is the meaning that you get out of the dikduk and the reading of what it says in the words. Chazal are darshaning, they might be kipshut al Chazal. The events aren't having Chazal said it, but that's not the interpretation of the pasuk. And that's why we have some disagreement. Rashi mixes. Rashi, some places will go stick with the Targum, some places go with Dikduk, many places take the drush of Chazal and say that as the Pshutus of Mikra, and sometimes he'll say that the drushes are drush. Rashi didn't have any sons, he had grandchildren, and Kedarka Shel Torah's grandchildren argued with him. His grandchildren were great Tamei Chachamim, they were Bali Taisvis, and Taisvis almost, when you learn Gemara Shel Taisvis, Taisvis's job is to argue with Rashi. I think Rashi had a lot of nachas from that, but that's the way it is. In Chumash, there's a less known pshat called Rashbam, who's also a grandson of Rashi, who felt that Rashi had not fulfilled his mission of pshat. And let's see it inside, because he says he discussed it with his grandfather. Extraordinary. He says, Yaskilu ve'yavinu oyevei seichel mashalim donu rabbeseinu ki ein mikinezi pshutai. People who understand will realize when Chazal said in mikinezi pshutai, meaning that every chelik of Torah has pshat. Av kikus ator boz lamdeinu ladeinu b'rimizas ha-pshat ha-goyz ha-loch zedinim ha-derichus ha-loshen v'yashloishim shtayim midosh ha-vlezim v'yashloishim v'yashloishim v'yashloishim. Even though the Iker of Torah is there to teach me the lessons falling out, which are to be found in Chazal in Drasha. We couldn't possibly ever paskin from a Chumash. We can pass from a Gemara, we may get it wrong, but it's possible. All the Rishonim pass from Gemaras, and that's where we paskin from. But we could never ever paskin from Chumash. Impossible. Without the dimension of Drush, impossible. And the Rishonim, because they were interested in doing the right thing, and that was the only thing that interested them, they more went with the drasha rather than with the pshat. And that's why they did not so much. They weren't osik in pshutus mikra. Being Chazal cast some sort of hesitation about learning Mikra for the sake of Mikra, and that's why they were not so into Pshutos Mikra. And he says, like Gemara Shabbos, Kedamasel Shabbos, Havino Bar Tanu Seishnin, because Sina Kol Talmud, I was 18, I had learned all the Gemara. And I never knew this klal of Emikra Tzei Pshuto. So he understands it to mean that there was a neglect on Pshuto Shal Mikra. V'gam Rabbeinu Shlomo Avi Imi Ma'or Einei Gola. Rabbeinu Shlomo is Rashi, my mother's father, the God Lador, Meir Einei Gola. Shepirish Torah Nevi'im Ksuvim. He was Mazbe Tanach, he wrote a Pshat. Nosen labeled for Pshutos HaMikra. He made a pirush based on Pshutos HaMikra. Va'af ani Shmuel b'Remeir Chasana Zatzal. I Shmuel, his the son of Remeir, his son-in-law. Nisvakachti imo. I argued with him about his pshat. Well, the fun of v'hoideli, and he admitted to me she'ilu hoylei p'nai, if he would have had free time, hayetzorach lasis pirushim acherim. He would make other pirushim based on pshat that is nischadish every day. I don't know what that phrase means. Does it mean the more modern way of learning? Does that mean pshat pashtus hamischadish mechol yom? A little hard to believe. I don't know what he means. My Rebbe Chaim Shravitz used to use this as a metaphor, is the Darshan, and his take was, life itself leads you to understand parts of Chumash. Like sometimes you go through an event and you say, wow, this is pshat and this. So that's a very, it's a beautiful metaphor, but it's hard to see the Rashbam, in where he's talking about pshat, using a metaphor like that, and I don't think that's what he meant. Whatever it is, it seems that he wanted Rashi. Rashi was moited to him. There's room to write a pirush that's much more noited to pshat. I want to just be masbir a little bit the other side. One of the pet peeves about our learning is that in yeshivas they don't learn Gemara, they don't learn Chumash, they don't learn Navi, and they don't know Navi, they don't know Chumash, etc., etc. The more modern places do learn a lot of Tanakh, mostly Tanakh, and so on. So there are two or three reasons, and it's important to understand it. It's important to understand why it is the Mahalach. Let's take one reason is that it's not as glamorous. Understanding most of Tanakh, it's kids only complain about it when we have to learn Gemara. But you try learning Iov or Tehillim or Mishle with kids, they're not terribly, terribly interested in it. It's not interesting, and if anyone thinks it's interesting, it's only interesting when the alternative is maybe Ksuvus or Bar Mitzvah. But sitting through that, you need to have a very poetic sense of things in order to appreciate it. It would not be a great click. That's one reason. A second reason, and appropriately, is a lot of times we have moved back because, as a reaction, because the Maskilim were very into Dikduk, Tanakh, and all sorts of secular knowledge, the kickback was that we'd stay away from it. Like every time you react, you don't always get the best, you don't always get that best median where you have it exactly where you should. Dikduk is something you should know. It's part of Ikra Torah. It's a limud that's very, very important. We've reacted, and unfortunately reaction a lot of times it goes too far in the other distance, or sometimes it's there as a shmira and it's appropriate and so on. Same thing with Tanakh, and same thing even with limud echol habdol, the secular things, which Shainim had a fair knowledge of science and philosophy, a knowledge that was consistent with what an intelligent, educated person would have. Because the Maskilim turned that into the Iker, it became important for us. We kicked back, and we kicked back very hard and very far. There's one more reason, and I think it's a more fundamental reason. And let's explain why they were so noted. Tanakh is an open book. And you see it. The people who are big Tanakhistim teach Tanakh as if it was putty in their hands to make whatever they want from it. Lahavdil Elif Alfei Havdalos. If you take some great secular work, you take Shakespeare, you can read into it whatever you want, and you do it. You can make the hero the villain the hero, and poor Shakespeare may or may not be rolling over in his grave. Doesn't make much of a difference, really. He did not have a monopoly on the truth, and therefore it's fine. And we're very impressed with a professor who gives a brilliant exposition on Shakespeare. Whether you really think Shakespeare meant that, didn't mean it, didn't dream of meaning it, or meant the opposite, doesn't make a difference. When we take Divrei Elokim Chayim, you take Tanakh, and you read into it whatever you want to read into it, which it is. Torah Shebiktav allows to read into it whatever you want. I've seen Shtiklach Torah, quote unquote, from people that consider themselves Shomer Torah Mitzvos Rabbanim, and there's a back and forth without a single Chazal or Rishon mention. It's, I think Yitzchak is this, I would imagine everyone would react this way, I would think if I were Yitzchak I would do this. My sense about the pasuk is that Avraham meant that, and it's wow. It's their Torah, and no shaykhs. I mean, the pasuk is kechayim be'ar yitzah. So there's no truth. There's no emes. There's no Torah's emes. Chazal gave us guidelines. When Chazal tell us that so and so is the Rosh and so and so is the tzaddik, we know it. Let's give an example. Let's give a simple example. It's something that I personally sort of experienced. I was a young boy and grew up in New York when being Jewish or Frum wasn't that popular. And I used to get the Reader's Digest every month. That was considered one of the holiest works possible, and it was very, very good to read it. And it was considered to be, you were highly educated and Frum if you had the Reader's Digest. And sure enough, one month they had an article about how wonderful the Bible is. And I mamish, I was like, I was bursting with pride, even the Reader's Digest was marking how wonderful Tanakh is. And I read it. I believe it was written by a conservative rabbi. I can't remember offhand. It might have been a galach, but I think not. And it goes about how eternal Torah is, and the truths that, and the people that they picture are really eternal figures. For instance, Jacob is the sneaky, sly, shrewd, sort of unscrupulous business guy, always wheeling stuff. Esau is a little slower, a little dumber, nicer, wholesomer, honest, and always getting duped by his sly brother Jacob. But in the end, even though he gets very angry, he's forgiving because he's such a nice guy. That's reading, I said, oh, mom, they got the story wrong. It's no. And it was like, and I couldn't figure it out. And then I said, oh, they probably don't have Rashi. That must be it. They never saw Rashi. So yes, you can read it. You can read Tanakh like that. And by reading so, you're being mahapet to emes. And then you're going to have a hard problem. Why? Because Baruch hated Esav so much. For the next, you know, if you continue in Tanakh, Esav is the bad guy and Edom is the bad guy. And you have a lot of answering to do about that. Chazal gave us guidelines, mitzad, on a mesoris of what events. It's just like on the books, if you read the communist literature, they were fantastic. Their literature was much better than the capitalist literature, but they were monsters. Yes.
Really, is there any qualification to this? I mean, the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam also, I mean, sometimes they do totally disagree with Chazal in terms
so
of...
They disagree in detail. Usually it's a pirush in a specific place. I don't think in the Ruach HaDvarim, the big picture is formed by the Pshutos HaMikra. The big picture, and like we pointed out, I mean, as we have in a few places, where he emphasizes that the Iker is the Matikim, and everything else is Hevel. So there is a very clear fidelity, certainly in the big picture, to the Ruach of Chazal, but in the smaller picture, there's room for... You know, it depends on the big picture, the small picture, really. That's what the issue is. In the small picture, yes, there's disagreement. No doubt about it. In the big picture, it's more or less fixed. So that was the Rashbam here. It's a very, very famous one. It doesn't add much of here in the Parsha. He's going off, but it certainly is very significant. Okay, now let us go to page 230. And there's an Abarbanel there about the interaction of the Gzeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Bechira of the brothers of Yosef. In other words, this whole event with the brothers, if it was a Gzeira, does it not take away from his Bechira now? So the Abarbanel says, וכבר חשבו אנשי חכמים שהיו כל המעשה הכרחי גוזל פני הספר של יעקב ונוסיימה. He says, Chazal tell us again and again, and really in the Pesukim, this one you can actually read in the Pesukim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Gezer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Goyal Mitzrayim, that was the Brisbane Apsarim. And it says in this Pasuk, and this is why he's speaking about this Pasuk, Vayishachem Me'emek Chevron, this is where he's bringing the it says, Chazal asks, is a heaven in a har? Anyone that still knows heaven is high up. It's coming from very deep eitza of the tzaddik buried in heaven. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu even came the haftacha of Ger Yezer Acha. Ba'omim gankez of HaNevracha, Roya Yaakov vina leir mitzayim shalshol shal barzol. That Yaakov should have been pulled down to Shalshos HaBarzel, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Rachem, and he brought the calf down, and so on. So you see very clearly that this was a plot from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get Chayisot to Mitzrayim. So did they have Bechir or not? Elo, shekashayu ben adas hazeh bezeh oif meblis ben esacheres, yeh bli sofik, say sepinas apkiris finishes the gambi. If you take it the way it is, you think that it's Sosa Bechira. That's what it sounds like. Well, the Kach Mashroi Shem Bezekvi Yonatayvu Shatachas HaKoyel Kefi HaGzer Loi Kisi HaKhechi. so you're left, if you just take it flat as it is, you're left with the bottom line that everything has to be, that everything is predetermined, and human free choice doesn't exist really. So he says, "Omnam hadvar machalokim v'imelov heim efsharim b'chirim amitim." He says, so he says like this: the tachlis hakolel, the bottom line that we will end up in Mitzrayim. Yes, that had to happen. We did not have a choice not to end up in Mitzrayim. But he says, "Omnam hadvar machalokim v'imelov." But the pieces that bring to that are very, very possible. A person has free choice in many ways. Yosef could have gotten sick, and therefore he'd have to go for medical treatment to Mitzrayim. He could have gotten a job as a Rav Rashi in Mitzrayim. They could have been evicted by enemies and had to run to Mitzrayim. There are many ways. It could have happened in many ways. Kulam efsharim b'chok ha'palim also. All of them possible. So when Yosef's brother sold him and they had to go after him, so on and so forth, that wasn't the only way the Gzeira could have miskayim. True, the way they chose, this is the way it happened. But they could have chosen many ways for it to happen, and no one way is yes.
And did it have to be Mitzrayim? Did they have to go to Mitzrayim?
Interesting. I'm not sure because it says Aristotle Lahem. I don't know if that's correct. It's a good point. Umash Amar Azal, Ba'isom Amamor Zalchatu B'Bchinas HaTachlis. They're talking about the tachlis. V'chein zochu v'yashalcheu me'imek chevron zeyes v'rapsarim levad. V'chein zochu etzel roi Yaakov v'es Mitzrayim shalshol shabazel harov sheviyim shom bolvad. No, Chazal say that Yaakov should have been schlepped down, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it easier. He speaks about the hunger. Lo yishar ha'maisar v'chi Yosef. They didn't have to rival him. They could have gone down because there was simply no food in Eretz Yisrael, and then they could have gone to Mitzrayim. And stay. They could have all found Parnassah in Mitzrayim. Uma shenamach v'efsharos abchiru ma'isam aprotim v'shnei advarim emes. So Abba Amnel says a tremendous yisoid. That's a yisoid that is really, really agreed upon by all, by everybody in a sense. Ramchal speaks about it in his way. The bottom line of everything will be as HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to be. We have the free choice in how we're going to get there. Kulei zakein, kulei chayev bring Mashiach. But and the same Mashiach will come. The question is, did we bring him down by kulei chayev, or did we bring him down by kulei zakein? When two people are boxing, the game can end when A knocks out B or B knocks out A. Either one, the game will come to finish. The question is how. Umashinama anachem b'efsharos abchira ma'isa protim shevas. We believe in bechira and specific ma'isa. And the truth is, it sort of is the basic attitude, and we'll see in Ramban later, that to do la'odam marcheleiv, a person has the ability to align his heart, to sort of set himself what he wants to do, u'me'ashem ma'aneloshan HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts the words in your mouth. In other words, I have the choice to decide what to do and to act in that way. What happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu chooses. We'll see in the Ramban soon. L'chein oymane, I say, shebnei Yaakov, mesha osen geisav acheihem, chotu pojanei aleh. By the way, the Shiloh also has a piece of Mechira. This is more or less what he says. V'ev Shiloh, mesha osen geisav acheihem, chotu pojanei aleh. V'ev Shiloh, mesha osen geisav acheihem, chotu pojanei aleh. V'ev Shiloh, mesha osen geisav acheihem, chotu pojanei aleh. I will ask about the head that's shiny masvik mode or here's some person. So he speaks more about this at the end of this parasha in pages 241 to 244. There's a Ben Asadigon and an Akeda that speak about this inyan of when do we say that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Gezeirah overrides a person's Bechira. Not if somebody was nigzah that he would die or be killed and I kill him, am I guilty or was it predetermined? They speak about this by Richus, and very, very, very important, obviously. We won't do it today, it's at the end of the parasha. But more or less, we look at each one and we say it is correctly so. People have the choices to make, and the Rabbanel says the details of how it is, the details of how it happens is up to a person. Okay, next piece is the Ramban. The Ramban says, and this is sort of compliment, it says somebody found him and he's wandering the field, he asked him, what are you looking for, and so on. He was wandering, he didn't know where he's going. He wandered into a field, he was looking for them in fields. Why is the pasuk? I mean, the bottom line was he got there. What's the difference which rest areas he stopped and who he asked for directions? I mean, the Torah could have skipped the whole thing, fast forward, and said, go there. And what's this whole piece? And so on. So he says, Lehagid, what's the pasuk telling me by bringing out all the details? Lehagid. He had a lot of simonim to send him back. He probably did not have a good feeling. He knew that his brother disliked him. And he's going there. And he's lost. And he's this. And he's that. He could have come back and said, Abba, I'm sorry, but I don't know. I wandered off and I couldn't find it. And it's too late to get there. So one thing is to tell me that, no, he had a mission and he went to do it. It also came to tell me, that what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants is going to, in the end, that's going to transpire, and the person's efforts don't necessarily lead to what he expected. He was going one place, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent him someone specifically to bring him there. That's what they meant, all these people were angels. In other words, because it was shluchim for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he needed to get there and be sold. So it's telling us that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring something about, he makes it happen. So in a certain sense, it complements the Avraham we saw before. It's a person has the right to do, and he has the ability to do. He has the rishus nesuri adam to do what he wants, and he gets schar and onus based on his efforts. What happens at the end? The man eloshen, that's it in Yad Hashem, and therefore it's going to be something that it's not up to him. So his resolution, in a sense, is maisim are up to people. Bottom line, results are up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, we have another 2-3 minutes. We'll see one more piece of Sfarno on page 232. It says, "Vayisnak lo yisal amisei." They wanted to kill him. Sfarno, being a Baal Lashon, says there's a problem here. Hine Lashon nochel yora alhamtzol l'ra. A nochel is a plotter. In modern Ivrit, a nochel is somebody who's a fraudster, he's a deceptive person. You know, why are you listening to Nochel? A Nochel is someone who's a fraudster. So he says Nochel means to deceive, defraud, etc. Kamoya shen niklu lachem. Oma, shechoshvu es Yosef belibom noichol lahonis. Vishebo aleihem loyludor shloima limtzalem alilo. He says here, Sfona says here, a profound yisod. The right, in grammar, we should have said, they plotted against him to die, to kill him. What's vayisnaklu? So he says Vaishnako means they pictured him to themselves as a nochel. They demonized him. They turned him into a demon, and that's why they were able to do such terrible things to them. So he says they thought Yosef to be a nochel. The lashon hispael, the lashon, the tough is a grammatical construct of hispael, which means a reflexive act to do to yourself. Vayisnakel also means they created in themselves, they made him into a nochel. Yorah al tzir adav nefesh, kamo shata misnakesh benafshi. Mitzayel b'lvavcho mokesh al nafshi. Misnakesh nafshi means you are creating in yourself. So a reflexive means you're doing something to yourself. V'loshon la'miso she'yomis hu es achiv, kamo shata sesh kumaisam l'avrubiz. U'bazeh hodia ma'hoya lomoy b'yoysu kol tzadik gemurim, atcha yishmotzeh Hashem zikoren, eich noadu lev yachtov l'argis achiyem, alamachor v'nichmol arom. The Torah is telling us, how could they have possibly done it to a brother? It's such a terrible thing. And the answer is, because they turned him into a demon. Even when the Torah faulted them, didn't fault him for selling him, but for the cruelty with which they went. They pictured Yosef as someone who is trying to plot against them. Bamis b'olam hazeh, or b'olam haba, or b'shneim. V'ater amra b'ol ha'argcha. So the concept that we have of demonizing someone. My father, Chayim Vracha, went through the Holocaust, and my father was a very thoughtful, philosophic person, and he told me in the ghetto he once saw a Nazi guard who looked a little more menschlich than the typical ones. I think it was a little dumber, kind of a farmer type person. And my father asked him, how can you do this to us? And he said the person answered him with real, sincerity, it's you Jews who brought it upon yourself. You're the ones who created this whole terrible war, and you're the ones that incited England against us and France against us and so that, and you're only getting what you just see. Your just reward. You by turning someone else into a demon, you allow yourself to do things you could never do to someone else. And so the Torah is telling us that, and the truth is, when you have a Muslim, the big machlokas in Klal Yisrael, when you had people, when you had the terrible, terrible machlokas in that, Chassidim Misnagdim and Rabbi Yaakov Emdin and Rabbi Saibishitz and all the machlokas in Klal Yisrael, you have. But when people come and they say Lashon Hara and they demonize the other person, what they accomplish is that you can't look at the facts in isolation. You can't debate point A, point B, point C. You say this person is a bad person, anything he does is bad, and that's, it's a result of that. There's a certain painting the person as a bad person, Betzim, then allows you, doesn't allow you to deal with issues point by point. You take the whole package. That was what the brothers did to Yosef by Yisnaklu. They turned him into a nochel, and they said, "Oh my gosh, he's coming to kill us! I mean, this is for him. He's so far away from our father. He's going to catch all of us, kill us, come back, and make up some story, and that's it." So habola harka, haskeva harko. Okay, over here.